A new study is sounding the alarm about our horseshoe crab populations, specifically in Connecticut. And the research was done by none other than the Maritime Aquarium right here in Norwalk. But what did the data reveal? And what are some solutions to protect our horseshoe crabs? Joining us now is Reba Raviraj, who is the project manager in the conservation department at the aquarium, but she's also one of the lead authors on this study. Reba, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you here. And I want to first ask, I know that the aquarium has its hands in a lot of different projects, a lot of different studies, a lot of different work that they're doing, especially with Long Island Sound. But why horseshoe crabs? When did we start looking at this population and where did your interest come into play?
So the aquarium has started looking into horseshoe crabs in the last few years. Something that we've noticed just out when we're doing field work and talking to other people is that their populations are really declining in Long Island Sound. And there are so many different interactive effects that could be causing that to happen. And so the aquarium was very interested in getting more into that research and trying to figure out why. What is the information that's out there? What are we missing? And how can we create steps to, you know, reach better solutions and protect the species in Long Island Sound.
Have we seen, Reba, a huge decline in recent years? Has this been going on for decades? Give us an idea.
So one of the papers that we recently published was a population analysis specifically in Long Island Sound. And so we analyzed six regional data sets spanning up to the last 46 years. And from looking at those data sets, we could see that the populations are declining significantly. All six data sets revealed a negative trend, and most of them were very significant. And so we're seeing about a 2 to 9% decline in the number of crabs per sample each year.
Why? What's going on? Why are we seeing the populations dwindle?
So in Long Island Sound, but also globally, there are so many different threats to horseshoe crabs. So they face overharvest and bycatch, specifically in the biomedical and fishing industry. There's coastal habitat loss and degradation that they're facing, climate change, insufficient management practices. So a combination of these different effects could be causing these populations to decline.
And I did notice when I first heard about the research that Connecticut did make a change recently in regards to bans that would impact fishing. Is that making much of a difference? Harvesting, I think it was.
Correct. So back in 2023, there were bait harvest restrictions that were enacted in Connecticut. And so this is relatively recent, right? So we won't expect to see a drastic change happen right away. It's more that their populations will hopefully recover slowly over time.
Okay. And again, we've got Reba here, who is the project manager in the conservation department at the Maritime Aquarium. She is also the lead author on these papers looking at the horseshoe crab populations. Are we getting close to extinction, do you think, Reba, or we still have time to reverse these population trends?
I believe we still have time to help protect the species, but we definitely recommend urgent protection for them at the state level, and we also recommend it become listed under the U.S. Endangered Species Act, which it currently is under consideration right now.
Under consideration. What does that even mean, Reba? Why would it be under consideration? And the reason I say that, maybe that seems really silly to ask, because I'd imagine once you are listed there, it means that every state has to have things enacted, right? I mean, is that why it's such a challenge to be accepted on that list?
It is a challenge. You know, there's so many other priorities going on, and it is very difficult because horseshoe crabs are elusive. So they only come up onto beaches and people notice them at specific times per year. And so I think for elusive animals or animals that just don't have as much attention towards them right now, it is very difficult to get those policies in place to better protect them before they become extinct.
I'm wondering what that process is even like. So do you have to go to the federal level, just the you know, a specific department that would classify them on that list? Or does it need to go to, you know, like the House, the Senate, all of that?
Correct. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure on the specifics, but I do know that it is a very lengthy process. And You know, a lot of this paperwork gets put on people's desks, and there's so many other conflicting priorities. So it does make it difficult to get through that process smoothly.
I just remember a couple of years back when the document, or not docu, it was like a show. No, it was a documentary. Tiger King came out on Netflix during the pandemic. And I remember the former executive director of the Beardsley Zoo, Greg Dancho, he'd come on my show. And he would talk about, you know, not only, you know, that situation and what it then led to with, you know, endangered species and side I don't know what they call it, side road or roadside zoos, things like that. But he also has talked before about how hard it is to get animals not only on this list of potentially endangered or, you know, species that need to be protected, but also just to be able to pass legislation that better protects species or, you know, conservation, you know, what have you. And I always find that really fascinating. I'm wondering, you know, if there is a better way to get things moving when it comes to, you know, our conservation and especially, you know, animal, plant species, you know, those populations. I always wonder, like, is there a better way we could do this? But I guess, again, if it then a federal that impacts everything, single state, I guess you do have to have, I don't know. I just always think, is there a better way we could do this where we're not waiting for years for something to be listed if it, you know, if we could make a difference quicker? But I'm digressing. Yeah. I'm going.
No, it absolutely is a challenge. And, you know, it does start with the people and, you know, being able to reach out to others, spread the word about horseshoe crabs, because if more people know that they are endangered and that we do need to protect them as a group, our unified voice really does help, you know, pave that way so that we can try and get these processes to happen faster and get the legislation that we need.
So Reba, I'm curious, what are some solutions we could do here in Connecticut? I mean, instead of waiting for the federal government, which again, that would be very helpful, but until somebody makes a decision or does something significant in Connecticut, what can we do to better support our horseshoe crab populations?
Definitely. So some of the key solutions that we extracted from the papers that we looked at is we really want to protect and restore horseshoe crab spawning areas and their juvenile habitats. And so that's essentially these sandy beaches and like the lower intertidal. We want to try and just be mindful of the space that we're using. And if we're on the beach during the summer, you know, if we see horseshoe crabs, give them space. If we notice that one of them is flipped up on their back, you know, flip them over, return them to the water. There are things that, you know, individual people can do to try and help the species thrive in the Sound. And, you know, just generally, we also want to try and adopt other strategies in the biomedical industry so that we can prevent or, you know, limit the use of horseshoe crab blood. And also consider captive breeding programs and head starting programs as well.
And with captive breeding, that's sort of like what you would do. Well, again, I would imagine that's what sort of like the Beardsley Zoo or a lot of these AZA accredited places do, which is that you have them in, right, that you have them in captivity. And that's where you would then have them, you know, procreate and you build the population
exactly
that way. Got it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you can release them into the wild or, you know, just try and help that species thrive a little bit more by, you know, just kind of getting in there and trying and adopting these different like aquaculture practices and, you know, help the population that way.
Interesting. I know there are some other, I'd say, species where sometimes there's and it comes from either the Maritime Aquarium or a Beardsley Zoo, you know, what have you. And they will have the general public do like Frog Watch, for example, which I know has become a national campaign. And, you know, during turtle season there, do you think that we're going to at any point have kind of public help, if you will, with either tracking horseshoe crab numbers or getting involved with also, you know, being the solution or at least, you know, having more evidence of the issue at hand to support that we need to help them out more?
Absolutely. So another program that the aquarium holds is our horseshoe crab tagging program. And so every year there are a few nights that we have, you know, like 50, 60 volunteers come out throughout the summer to help tag horseshoe crabs during their spawning season. And so that is a great way that we can track their numbers, their migration path, and, you know, have a better idea of, you know, how the species is doing and like continuing to monitor them.
Okay. Well, Reba, again, I appreciate you, project manager in the conservation department at the Maritime Aquarium and also lead author on these papers, again, really focusing on our horseshoe crab populations. Thank you so much for the work that you do and also sharing all of this information here on WICC. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. And thanks again for having me on here.
You're very welcome. I also will attach the latest information coming directly from the Maritime Aquarium to our website, and that is voiceofct.com if you want to learn more.